History has reduced Rosa Parks to a tired seamstress who spontaneously refused to give up her bus seat, a convenient fable that allows Americans to celebrate progress while ignoring persistent racial inequalities. The truth is far more compelling. When Parks died in 2005, becoming the first woman to lie in honor in the Capitol Rotunda, the woman celebrated in national tributes bore little resemblance to the actual Rosa Parks. The sanitized mythology erases decades of deliberate activism before Montgomery and 40 years of political work afterward. As her friends noted with bitter irony, the woman who had been red-baited throughout her life for her radical politics was posthumously transformed into a meek, accidental heroine. In reality, Parks was a seasoned freedom fighter whose December 1955 bus stand represented just one moment in a lifetime of resistance against American injustice. A woman who understood that the price of dignity was often steep, but always worth paying. Rosa McCauley Parks' activism began with her family's defiant dignity. Born in 1913 in Tuskegee, Alabama, she was raised by her maternal grandparents. Her grandfather, Sylvester Edwards, a former slave and Marcus Garvey supporter, kept a shotgun ready to defend against night riders, the first activist in my life, as Parks would later say. Her 1932 marriage to Raymond Parks deepened her commitment to justice. Raymond, who defended the Scottsboro Boys, held secret armed meetings in their home and supported Rosa in completing high school in 1933, a time when only 7% of Black Americans held diplomas. By her first NAACP meeting in 1943, Parks had become a deliberate activist who rejected submission to white authority, particularly resisting the exploitation of Black women. She was no accidental figure in history. As Montgomery NAACP's secretary from 1945, Parks emerged as its most dedicated activist. She investigated sexual assaults against Black women, aided voter registration despite intimidation, and documented police brutality and lynching cases. Despite facing threats, obscene calls, and economic reprisals, she persisted, driven by her commitment to freedom. In 1954, Parks reinvigorated the NAACP Youth Council, teaching young members about respectability and political engagement. She challenged segregation by taking them to white water fountains and organizing library protests. She admired their action-oriented approach, particularly their immediate advocacy for anti-lynching legislation. A pivotal moment came in summer 1955, when Parks attended Highlander Folk School's workshop on racial desegregation. The integrated environment proved transformative. It was her first experience without white hostility. The stark contrast with Montgomery's segregation strengthened her resolve upon returning to her department store job. By December 1955, Rosa Parks had fought racial injustice for 12 years, with minimal progress. The murder of 14-year-old Emmett Till in August 1955 devastated her. As poet Nikki Giovanni wrote, Parks could not stand that death, and in not being able to stand it, she sat back down. Montgomery's bus system exemplified segregation's brutality. Despite being the majority riders, Black passengers endured inferior service, while bus drivers wielded unlimited authority, forcing them to stand over empty seats and treating Black women disrespectfully. Others had resisted, including 15-year-old Claudette Colvin, whose rough arrest in March 1955 particularly angered Parks. These incidents proved their committees and petitions were futile. When driver James Blake demanded her seat on December 1, 1955, Parks looked him in the eye and refused. She wasn't physically tired, but tired of giving in, knowing that moving meant accepting humiliation. If I did not resist being mistreated, she explained, I would spend the rest of my life being mistreated. Though aware of the risks, Parks remained composed, strengthened by her faith and ancestors. Her defiance wasn't spontaneous, but the culmination of years fighting second-class citizenship. Rosa Parks' stand triggered severe consequences. She lost her job at Montgomery Fair, while her husband Raymond was forced to resign from Maxwell Air Force Base. Their landlord raised their rent, creating financial crisis. Beyond physical violence against boycotters, Parks faced economic hardship and relentless harassment, experiencing the irony of being nationally famous yet impoverished. Though successful as a fundraising speaker, Parks donated all proceeds to the movement. The MIA hired 4 women for office work, but overlooked Parks despite her qualifications. The persecution affected them deeply. Raymond turned to drinking and had a nervous breakdown. Parks refused to abandon her civil rights work, though stress led to ulcers and chronic insomnia. By 1957, both remained unemployable in Montgomery. Their departure was hastened by tensions within the civil rights community, where some resented Parks' prominence. As she later noted, "I can't exactly say that the reaction from what happened in the boycott made me leave, but I guess something did have a part in our deciding to go." After moving to Detroit in 1957, Rosa Parks found Northern racism nearly as pervasive as Montgomery's, with discrimination persisting in housing, employment, and policing, despite the absence of formal segregation. Parks remained politically engaged, working with Detroit's radical activists and supporting John Conyers' 1964 congressional campaign. Conyers hired her in 1965, her first paid political role after decades of activism. During Detroit's 1967 uprising, Parks worked at Conyers' office, which became a complaint center. She viewed the uprising as a response to white resistance and Black youth frustration with systemic inequalities. Parks named Malcolm X as her hero, not Martin Luther King Jr. Though she respected King, Malcolm's boldness reminded her of her grandfather. Raised to stand up for self-protection, she believed nonviolence could be mistaken for weakness. As an elder stateswoman, Parks remains active, supporting striking workers, backing militant Black labor movements, introducing Shirley Chisholm, and opposing the Vietnam War. As historian John Bracey noted, "She never gave up. That's important to young people. Why are you tired? I'm not tired." She was an example. In 1987, Parks founded the Rosa and Raymond Parks Institute for Self-Development, focusing on youth leadership through Black history and education programs. Though initially hesitant about her public role as the mother of the civil rights movement, she used her platform to educate students while noting their unfamiliarity with key activists like Fred Gray and Fannie Lou Hamer. After her death in 2005, politicians rushed to honor her, often reducing her to a tired old woman, a narrative that helped construct an image of post-racial America, despite Parks' continued emphasis on the need for racial justice. Parks wished to be remembered as someone who always wanted to be free and wanted it not only for myself. Her true legacy demands recognition of racial injustices' persistence and commitment to her lifelong goals: legal justice, community empowerment, voting rights, education, and economic equality. She wasn't just a woman who refused to move, she was one who never stopped moving forward, even when the path was treacherous.